Welcome to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Journey with us as we discuss the life of a gentleman and how we can gain more respect and confidence with lessons in life, etiquette, and personal style. Each week, we will bring engaging discussions, thought-provoking interviews, and tips on upgrading your personal style. We are all a work in progress. Let's take this journey together. Let's live the life of a gentleman. Welcome to another edition of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. I'm Richard Taylor, award-winning author, apparel industry expert, and business owner. And I'd like to personally thank you for listening today and taking this journey with us as we strive to make continual progress in living by the gentleman's code. Please, if you would, do us a favor. Would you subscribe to the podcast and also leave us a review? It would mean so much to us and help us gain exposure so we can bring this information to other listeners as well. We sincerely appreciate you taking the time to listen. As a token of our appreciation, we'd like to offer you a free gift. We'd like to invite you to download your own copy of the ebook or audiobook, The Life of a Gentleman. This is a 144-plus page guide that's available at harrisonblakeapparel.com. Just go to the blog and download your free copy. And at this time, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Charles. Charles, how are you doing today?
Well, as always, Rich, I am doing well. It is good that this podcast has had so much success. We are so grateful for all the listeners and all the reviews. We can increase in our availability, so thank you and continue on. How are you doing today there, Richard?
I'm doing good today. You know, each week we bring a different type of discussion. As we mentioned in the outset, you know, every week we are not going to just talk about fashion. And so this week I thought it would be interesting if we talked about body language. What do you think about that subject?
Body language is very important because, as we talked about on the previous one, we judge so many people within the first 3 to 15 seconds of seeing them. And what do we have to judge by also, too? It's just the body language. So this is an important topic.
Yeah, definitely, because the first thing people see is your appearance, and the next thing, probably before you get to open your mouth, is your body language. So before you get to actually speak, you're already telling a story, as it were, about who you are and what you're all about. So we definitely think this will be a very important topic to just discuss and some food for thought for the listeners. Don't you think that'd be good?
Yes, I do. And it's funny because when I kind of think of body language, I kind of think about a child or a baby. And even though they can't communicate verbally, they tell us almost everything through what? Yes, their body language. You can tell what emotions they feel just by their body language. You know, it's the same with us. How you carry yourself, it speaks volumes. And it tells so many people what's going on, what your feelings are, and emotions just from your body language.
You see that a lot. And that illustration that you used makes perfect sense. Having raised children, I'm well aware that a child can let you know exactly how they feel without being able to speak or verbalize any words. So that's a good point that you brought up. Now, the thing about this is, when you first meet someone, as we just kind of talked about at the outset, perhaps they haven't even opened their mouth yet, but they have the opportunity to speak to you based off perhaps their posture or the handshake that they give. What are some of those things that you kind of first look for to see if someone is perhaps a confident person or a gentleman?
Well, one of the first things that I look for, or when you look at someone, to see whether they're looking at you. That eye contact is key. When you look at someone right in the eyes, as we talked about, I think it was last week in the podcast, all depending on your culture, whether showing respect or not staring someone down. But when you give that respectful eye contact to somebody, it really shows confidence and it shows that you have a self-respect within yourself.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I was talking to someone and I mentioned body language and that it might be a topic that we approached on the show. And they actually asked, what is body language? So the things you mentioned, these are body language. Your eye contact, your posture, your smile, your arm position, as I mentioned earlier, your handshake, all of these things play a part in how you're viewed and how you're perceived by other people.
Yes, and language, once again, is something that speaks to somebody or something that we tell. So when we look at language, even within our bodies, what are we telling to the other person?
Yeah, here's one that we've touched on, the smile, right? A lot of people don't use that to their advantage. What do you think are some of the advantages of using a smile to kind of open up doors for yourself?
Well, a smile, it tells so much, or it shows so much, or people appreciate a smile when you do smile. Smiling, it shows that you're approachable. It shows that you're caring. It shows that you can be trustworthy also, too. A lot of people, they want to use the term, but they want to mean mug. They want to put a frown on their face or a scowl. What does that tell a person, or what are you projecting from there? So when you smile, like you talk about those doors that's opening, we're opening up into a person's mind. We're opening up into a person's heart, and we're telling them or showing them that they can trust us just by a smile. Why do you think a smile is so important?
I think it shows that you're an easygoing person, you're approachable, and that you're non-confrontational, because today there's so much animosity in the world, and sometimes you see people and they're frowning, and immediately you kind of want to step out of their way. And as a gentleman, you don't want to present yourself in that way. I think you definitely want to have everybody feel comfortable around you.
That does make sense, and that comfortability, that is what a gentleman wants, and that is why we're taking this journey within life, as to become the best gentleman that we can by doing the little things, by even just smiling.
Yeah, another thing that I wanted to bring out was your posture. And this is something that I've seen on various case studies where they show the difference in you kind of slouching or standing straight up. And the research that I saw shows that you should be standing straight with your ears lining up over the middle of your shoulders. The thing about this is when you do this, you actually appear taller and you appear more fit in a better physical condition. That's a plus too, right?
Yeah, that is. Now, posture, that's how you stand. That's the position. Is that what we're talking about? That type of posture?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing about posture is it's something that we don't think about, but if you're self-conscious about it, you have to practice it, you know, standing up straight or sitting properly in a chair, because as we age, that lack of posture is really going to catch up with us as well. We've all seen an elderly person that's kind of hunched over, and it could be due to genetics, but also we can correct that in some ways by having good posture, which is going to benefit us from a physical standpoint, but also in the way that we're viewed by others.
Man, that is an excellent tip. And also too, when I think of posture, I know I tell my son a lot of times, he has his electronic. It's just a part of life now. He has his tablet and he's always bending down. His head is, and his neck is not properly aligned. He's just looking there, and I'm like, sit up straight. You know, sit up straight. Don't be looking at the tablet so long, or use it within the proper way. It's even also too, whenever you're in public transportation or you may be out, people are always looking down. They're talking and walking, or they're texting, they're looking at their tablets and their phones, and this is actually messing up their posture, and it's actually doing more harm to them in the long run. So when we talk about sitting up straight, or we're talking about looking at somebody, or even how your head and shoulders are aligned together, be conscious also too about when you're looking at your phone and how you're looking at your phone and your tablet too.
That's definitely a good point. I know in an office environment these days too, there's been a move towards more ergonomic desk seating, where actually they have a lot of these desks now that are adjustable and you can actually stand up. So that will help you and have good posture. So if you work in a cubicle environment or office environment, it might be good to look into that, because a lot of employers are offering the option of having a desk where you can stand up vertically for most of the day just so you can improve your posture. So that's a good point too. I don't know about you, but I'm going to go into another part of body language that is very controversial sometimes, and that's the handshake. What do you think about the handshake, Charles?
Are you talking about the limp noodle handshake?
Yeah, or the dead fish handshake, right?
The dead fish or the limp noodle, when you go to shake somebody's hands, you thrust out your hand, say, "Hi, how you doing? My name is Charles, what's your name?" And they say, "My name is," and they give you this handshake that is limp, that is weak, or maybe even wet. What do you think about that?
I definitely don't want the wet one, but the thing, I've experienced all of those. And the thing is, I think we both can say that we've been in a position where we've had to interview different people for positions. And the handshake is a good starting point where we have to make a judgment call about the person. That's kind of like the door is open and you're going to walk through the door. Let's see what you do with it. And when you deliver that weak handshake, it's not a good first impression.
No, it's not a good first impression. It doesn't tell the story about you. You may be the best person. You may have some great skills, but remember, we're still being judged beyond knowing you or from your first impressions, from your body language. So give me that handshake. What does that handshake say? Are you a confident person? Can you be in the position? And if I hire you, will you go and give some of my clients this dead fish handshake, or would you be assertive? So that handshake is important because it tells so much about your personality, or it can tell so much about your personality just from a simple handshake.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that too, because no matter what the person does for the rest of that interview, they could probably ace it, be very well spoken, be very highly qualified. But what sticks out in your mind is that physical contact, and that weak handshake is going to leave a negative impression on your brain, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now, let me ask you now, is there a proper way to shake the hand? How should a hand shake go?
Well, I think it should be firm. You want to clasp the other person's hand. Make sure it goes all the way in there. You're not the Queen of England, so you don't want to just slip like three fingers in there and do a little dainty shake. And I've also been told by some human resource professionals that are women, if you're a man and you're shaking a woman's hand, there's no reason to give her some little dainty handshake as if she cannot handle a firm squeeze. But on the other hand, what do we not want to do with the handshake?
We definitely don't want to act like they were having an arm wrestling contest. Meaning we shake the hand and now it's a competition for you. This is not a competition that who can squeeze the hardest. Both of y'all are sitting there going to your knees and you just got to the handshake. No, it's a lot more beyond than just trying to squeeze it. When you take your hand off, if you see the impressions of the fingerprints on the other side of the back
gone too far.
Of your hand, I think you may have went too far.
You went a little too far if you see that. That's true. Now, here's something else with the handshake. This is something that you see politicians do on television sometimes. Have you ever seen them do the elbow move where they reach out and touch the other person's elbow when they're shaking the hands?
Yeah, it shows a little assertiveness, or it gives them a friendly impression. Also, too, what do you think that move does when you're able to master the elbow?
When you're able to master the elbow touch, it definitely shows a level of control. That's what people who study body language, they say the person who does the elbow move where you touch the other person's elbow with your left hand as you're shaking the hand, that signifies that you are in control. So, that being said, in a job interview situation, probably not the time to do that. Now, at a business meeting or a negotiation, maybe you want to do that to give yourself the upper hand. What do you think about that?
Yes, because in a job interview or when you're just meeting someone, like I said, it's not a competition. You're not there comparing yourself to them. You still need this person. So as we have learned in our previous shows, we have learned other tips just to keep it simple, so to speak. But then after the interview, think have went well, you want to give that congratulations, and then you go to shake their hand, and you do the elbow move, put a little touch to there, this will leave a great impression upon your interviewer.
Yes, definitely. And here's another one you can use. This one signifies a little bit of warmth or extra greeting, or it could also be used at times like a funeral to show empathy. It's when you shake someone's hand and they're shaking your hand. With your left hand, you touch their right hand and kind of clasp it. Not hard, just a soft clasp, only for a moment to show that you are very sincere. But the thing is, while you're giving that handshake, the clasp move with your left hand over theirs, you need to make eye contact to genuinely show sincerity.
And all of these moves, it may seem funny just listening to it. It may say, how does this work? This is funny. But if you start watching, like you said, some of the politicians or just some of the people who you think show a lot of empathy, some of your bosses, if you see the moves that they do, look at that. Study that. A gentleman always uses his surroundings to be able to make himself better. And when we master some of these moves, then this will make us better. But if you haven't learned this trick yet, then simply practice. Practice on a family member, on a coworker, and get the proper touch. Because like you said, sometimes we make it a smack or we do too hard. No, we're not talking about this touch, but we're talking about a proper, sincere touch. And it really shows your sincerity.
Yeah, it does. Now, here's a couple more before we round out this discussion. Speaking of showing sincerity, or actually showing appreciation for someone, perhaps you're working as a team and you complete a task and you want to tell someone that they've done a job well done, one of the things you can do is simply a light pat on the back. Again, we're not talking about slapping them on the back, just a light pat on the back or even a hand on the shoulder in many cultures signifies a sign of respect. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, yes. That move right there, it brings you, it puts you at ease. It lets you know that they say thank you without even saying a word. Remember, we're still talking about body language.
Exactly.
So what we're doing is speaking to the other person. So when they put that hand on there, it just lets you know that the job you've done is well appreciated. It's a well done, and you feel so much better about yourself.
Yeah, it's amazing that you brought that up, that you're saying thank you without verbalizing it vocally. It's amazing what you can do with your body language. Now, before we round out, I'm just going to run down a few of the last tips about body language that I think the audience would appreciate. One of the things that's mentioned is to avoid putting your hands in your pockets. And also, don't fidget with your hands. It makes people very nervous when they see you fidgeting. Also, as we mentioned, keep your eyes forward, straight, making good eye contact. And if you're walking, take wide steps because that's going to suggest confidence. Do you have anything to add to those few tips, Charles?
This is one of the tips. We kind of touched on this a little bit, but my gentleman's tip is that you need to smile. Now, I'm not talking about not like the Joker where you look crazy, but I'm talking about just a nice smile. And did you know that it takes less muscles to smile than it does to frown? So when we're smiling, we gotta make our energy count for ourselves.
That's a good tip. It definitely is going to open up some doors and especially help us in living the life of a gentleman. So that's what we're gonna do each week. Kinda just touch on a subject, give some tips, some discussion about it, and hopefully we can all apply these in different aspects of our life. But at this time, what we're going to do is transition into one of our favorite parts of the podcast. That's the interview segment. Charles, are you ready for that?
Let's go.
And now it's time for this week's segment of The Gentleman's News. Exclusive interviews with exceptional people discussing all things gentleman, from business to fashion to lifestyle, industry leaders, authors, and more. This is The Gentleman's News.
This week on the Life of a Gentleman podcast, we have in the studio with us another special guest. And we're so excited to bring on this special guest to talk about a very important topic for gentlemen. We are going to be discussing all things cologne. We have with us Gregory Pittman, who is a cologne connoisseur of sorts. He has been into cologne for many years and has extensive knowledge on different types of cologne, the best cologne for you. So he's going to help us out and answer some questions. Greg, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're glad that you came on. Could you do us a favor and just as a way to open up, could you tell us how you got into cologne and why you have such a passion for it?
It was 1992, and all over TV, all over the magazines, all you heard in ads and all you saw in ads was cool water.
I remember
everywhere
that.
Everywhere you go. And I said, I wonder what this is. I wonder what this smells like. Everywhere, cool water. Every store in the mall, that's all they had. So I went, and I smelled it, and that was it.
You've been hooked ever since?
Ever since, and that's been since 1992.
Now in 1992, that's when I used to call it the smell goods. Is it the fragrance or is it the smell goods?
It's definitely the smell goods.
Right. Why do you recommend for guys to try to get into cologne? Because a lot of guys are nervous to do it.
Not too many people eat a meal without salt. Cologne is the salt of life.
Why do you call it the salt of life? Can you explain that?
Salt adds flavor. Salt makes regular chicken delicious chicken. So applying that to life, that little bit of scent is something that you have to make your outfit complete, to make your look complete, to make your evening complete.
Now, the one thing about salt, or the one thing that I worry about, is using too much when I'm cooking, and sometimes the whole meal can be ruined. Is that the same way when it comes with fragrance or cologne?
One thing about cologne is so much more than just the amount that you use, and that's where the education comes in. It's a lot of different factors with cologne. It's a lot of different factors with not just the amount that you use. You have to take in mind many different things. Where you're going, who's gonna be there, what's gonna be going on, what'd you eat that day, what time of the year is it? Is it cold, is it hot? You know, what do you plan on wearing? What kind of fabric are you gonna wear? Because it's gonna affect the way that the cologne is gonna wear on you.
Okay.
What medication did you take that day? Your actual medication affects the way that cologne comes through your body.
Now that's a one that's got me raising my eyebrows. So let's start from the top. Are there some certain hard and fast rules for cologne?
Well, I don't know about rules because everybody's different. I know for me, something that you want to definitely keep in mind is, what are you going to? Is it going to be a party? Is it going to be a party where there's going to be food? Are you going to be competing with your scent, with the meal that's going to be there? Are you competing with that? You know, is it going to be a party where there's going to be dancing? You know, is the facility going to be air conditioned? All these different kinds of things come into mind when you think of a scent that you want to wear.
So why is that important to have the particular place or the event or even what you're wearing? Why is that important when it comes to fragrance?
Give you an example. If I'm going to graduation party, 9 times out of 10 I'm gonna be wearing something cotton. So I'm gonna wear a cologne that is not gonna be too heavy that the cotton can't absorb it. So I'm not gonna wear, for instance, something like Yope, because that's extremely heavy and that won't be absorbed in the cotton. So I'm gonna wear a little bit lighter fragrance versus something you go to a party or something in the fall where you might wear tweed, you might wear wool. You can wear a little bit lighter cologne. So it just depends on where you're going and what time of the year it is and what you plan on doing.
So there's no one size fits all cologne that you can just have your one go to. So different occasions, you need different fragrances. Is that right? Am I following you?
Exactly. You want to be able to, your cologne is like your signature. It's one of a kind. So even though you got 20 different guys in the room all wearing one kind of cologne, once people know you, you want to be able to leave that scent in their mind. Wow, that guy smells good.
So it's the same thing as we talk about fashion here, the life of the gentleman, and definitely dressing for the occasion. So you're trying to say, just like we wouldn't dress in a certain way, or we take consideration of how we dress, we should take consideration also too of what fragrance or cologne we should wear.
Exactly. It's very important when you especially look at marketing. Think of just some of the words that they use to describe cologne. Stimulating, intense, mysterious, opulent, refined, seductive, vibrant, dynamic, explosive. These are all adjectives that evoke emotion. So that's something that's associated with cologne, emotion. And you want to, when you go to an event, you want to be able to evoke a certain emotion. So to help with that, you want a certain scent, a particular scent.
Yeah, that makes total sense the way you broke that down for us. I'm starting to really understand it now. Now, could you do something for, let's say, a guy who's just beginning to get into cologne? Let's say you go to the counter of a department store or a cologne shop. What are the first things you need to ask or look for? Or if you're working, or if somebody's working at the store, what are the questions they should ask to kind of point somebody in the right direction?
If I go to a cologne counter and I talk to somebody and tell them that I'm interested in a cologne, for me, they need to ask me, what do I do for a living? Where do I work?
Now, wait a minute. Why does that matter, what you do for a living?
Just give an example. I work in an enclosed space with up to 200 to 300 people every single day. So I'm not gonna want a very expensive top shelf cologne when I'm gonna be mixing with so many different aromas, different odors, different shampoos, different conditioners, different lotions. All these different things are gonna counteract with what I'm wearing.
Even though that they're subtle smells, they're still would mix in with yours?
Exactly, and it would have no effect.
Oh, really? So yours would be kind of null and void there.
Exactly, it defeats the purpose.
Okay, well, what are some other things that you can learn at the cologne counter?
Well, as a person that's asking me and talking to me, that's selling me the cologne, I want them to know what I need it for, where I'm going, what I'm doing. I want them to also know what are some of my likes, what are some of my dislikes, you know, what kind of fabric am I going to be wearing, and most importantly, what emotion do I want to invoke?
So if the person behind the counter just say, hey, I have a cologne that I think you might like, try this and spray this, what should we do then?
The first thing that I would do is think and keep in mind, did they ask me those questions? And now, knowing cologne the way I do, are you gonna bring something to me that's beneath me? And when I say beneath me personally, I'm older than a 21-year-old kid. So I don't want something that every 21-year-old kid is wearing. But I'm also not over 50, so I don't want something that all the older men are wearing. I want something that's age appropriate and that's appropriate for the situation that I'm gonna be in.
Yeah, I guess, is this like your taste in food? Is that the same with cologne? Can it change as you age?
It definitely can change, and it definitely can mature. And I think that's what's so nice about knowing your body and knowing what your needs are. Because your needs for work are gonna be different from your needs for maybe a social event, like a party or something of that sort. And even for a party, you gotta keep in mind, are you competing with what's going on in the room? Is it gonna be a room that's filled with cigarette smoke? Is it gonna be a room that's filled with tons and tons of perfume? Or tons and tons of scent off the food that's gonna be in the room? So you gotta keep that in mind. Are you gonna be, at the end of the night, mixing with all those other colognes from all the sweat that you're sweating, from all the dancing that you're doing?
So the type of cologne that you're wearing when you're at these events, how long should it last? Should it only last just a few seconds, or should it last the whole day, or what is your takes on that?
For me personally, I like to leave a smile when I go through a room. And for me to leave a smile, I like a nice, subtle scent that 5 minutes after I'm gone, that scent lingers in the room.
Now, how is that accomplished? Because when I was younger, I used to take a bottle, I'll take out both hands, and I'll put a cup in one hand and a whole cup in the other hand. I'll throw it in the air, kind of like LeBron James, and it comes all over me, or I missed it and I go through. Like, how is that accomplished, or how much should a person wear?
Well, once again, like you just said, you did that when you were younger, and we all make those mistakes. But as you get older, you learn pulse points. You have pulse points in your wrists. You have pulse points in your neck. Why not put some on your wrist, put some on your neck, put some on your shirt, put some on your collar? All these different points are pulse points, and that way it'll be able to last longer during their activity, whether it's, you know, having a nice conversation with dinner, or whether it's dancing, you know, anything that's going to get your pulse rate up, that's going to help spread your cologne.
Oh, okay, so that's how it's done, putting it there. Here's a real question that gets asked a lot also. I don't want to forget to ask this one. The cost of cologne. There seems to be a wide range. Does it matter? Let's say, can a $50 bottle of cologne have the same effect as a $150 bottle of cologne? Does that play a factor? If I see expensive cologne, does that mean that's the best?
Not necessarily. Because you can have a wonderful effect and leave a wonderful impression and evoke the right emotion with the less expensive cologne. It just depends on how you wear it and what you're wearing it to and what you're wearing it for. Give you an example. 15 years ago, the day that I met my wife, I went to mall and I went to the perfume counter and I told the person behind the perfume counter that today's a special day. I'm going to go meet my wife today, and I know it. So I want something that she'll never forget and that I will always treasure. The lady smiled, and she sat there back there for a minute, and then she went and got this little bottle and gave me this cologne, and it worked perfectly. I put some on, and then I put some on my coat because it was February, and I knew that by the time the party was over, we would probably stand there around out in the cold air, so I wanted it to be on my coat. And it just worked out perfect because we stood outside after the party was over and my wife-to-be, which I didn't know at the time, but the wife-to-be put my coat on, and to this day you ask her, she never forgets that. She never forgets the scent of that eternity.
Well, so not only did you have the eternity, but you was also epitomizing the life of a gentleman by handing her your coat.
Absolutely.
Pretty smooth there. Now, one question that I do have, because I know some people, they do have allergies toward fragrances. Is there a type of cologne that is hypoallergenic? Or if you have problems with fragrances, how can you still smell good?
That's a good question. Something that you want to keep in mind when you think about cologne, keep it simple. You want to smell good. That's it. But when you actually look at some of the ingredients of cologne, there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different hints of items that are in cologne, 10 different ingredients that are in cologne. All you want is to smell good. So if you have or are going to be in the presence of people that have allergies, you just want to smell good, break it down. Keep it simple. Get one note scents. Get an oil. Get a patchouli oil, a bergamot oil, just one, instead of, say for instance, a cologne that has neroli oil, bergamot, olive flower, cedarwood, tanaka bean. All these different scents and all these different ingredients are in one cologne. Keep it simple. You just want to smell good. So there's definitely ways to get around the allergies.
Oh, great advice there, because that is a problem with a lot of people. I know it gives them migraines and things like that. So you have to be careful and considerate as a gentleman. What, though, are those different type of scents? Can you break that down? Like, I know I hear people say, well, this cologne is kind of woodsy, or this one is kind of spicy. Explain that to us.
Absolutely. Actually, what I'm going to do is give a couple different actual names of colognes and break them down. Let's start with Acqua di Gio. In Acqua di Gio, some of your key ingredients are Calabria bergamot, mandarin, persimmon, rosemary, jasmine, amber, cedar, patchouli. So all those ingredients together, they make an aquatic citrus fragrance. So that's kind of a sweet fragrance.
Oh.
So then you go from that all the way over to Armani Code. Now in Armani Code, you have neroli, you have bergamot, you have olive flower, you have gatewood, cedarwood, and tonka bean. Now you mix all those ingredients together and you get a fresh, woody, oriental scent. And then take it to the far other end of the spectrum. Let's just go with classic polo. You got basil, you have chamomile, and you actually have leather. Tobacco, patchouli, and oak moss are all the key ingredients of polo. You mix all that together, you get a woodsy, herbaceous scent. So different ingredients make different kinds of scents, from woody spicy to oriental spicy to aromatic woodsy. You even can get a watery, fougere scent. So many different ingredients can make many different scents.
Wow, that really just took us all over the world, or took us on the spectrum. So let me ask you, does your ethnicity have a bearing on the type of smells, or do the person, or does the smell vary from place to place?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes the ethnicity of a person, when you mix that with the diet that they have, they're going to be more prone to certain scents. Like, say for instance, you have a person that uses a lot of curry. Curry is an extremely strong scent, and that's an extremely strong spice. So that comes out in your pores, that comes out in your skin, you know, that comes out in your hair. Now, you take a soft cologne and mix that soft cologne with the scent of curry, the cologne's not gonna win that battle.
Yeah, I appreciate how you broke that down for us. Now, that's something that kind of blew my mind. I never would have thought about that, for real. We're going to ask you a couple more questions before we wrap up, but now that you're telling us about the importance of cologne, we understand it, the benefits of it, but you want that fragrance to last. I know Charles brought this out earlier, but could you just give us a reminder or kind of elaborate, how can we get that scent to last? Because I've heard a lot of guys say that they put it on, they can't smell it an hour later. So is the scent there, or does your nose just get used to it?
Actually, that's another really good question. Something that a lot of people use to help themselves is the layering process, or the layering method.
Okay, what's that?
You'll have your actual eau de toilette or your cologne spray. Now, as a man, you'll have your aftershave lotion and your aftershave balm, okay? And when you go to the store and get these gift sets, you can also get the body wash, and you can also get deodorant of the same scent. When you layer it, that has a really, really good chance of lasting you throughout your event.
That makes total sense, and I've seen those gift sets, and everything comes packaged. And let's say you use a generic brand of aftershave and a generic brand of lotion. Can you still do the layering, or do you need to do a different process?
Now, that's another interesting question. Now you can have some fun with it. That same aftershave that you put on your skin, there's another surface that you can put that on. Did you know that?
No, I'm trying to figure out what that's going to be.
Did you know that your skin, being porous, is a good surface, but your hair is a better surface, because the way the hair is designed, the follicles of your hair hold the scent of cologne much longer than your skin.
So you're saying you can actually, how would you apply it to your hair?
You can actually put it on your comb, or put it on your brush and brush your hair with it, or you can actually put it on your hands and run it through your hair very gently. So that way, you have it on your skin and it's in your pores, but as you sweat, the light scent that you put and the light layer that you put in your hair follicles will actually be able to lather up, and you'll be able to smell it a lot better.
Wow, so the advantage of that is when a person hugs you, they can smell that on your hair all day.
Exactly. And that's a little secret that women have been using for years.
It's just been exposed. Now, let me ask this for the guys that are follically challenged. Can we do that as well? If, let's say you have no hair, you have a low hairstyle, or you're bald, can you still apply cologne to your head, or would it irritate your scalp?
Well, you do have to be careful, because it's still derma, so it's still your skin. But even a person that's bald still has those follicles. So once it gets in those follicles, it can still come out and last a whole lot longer than it would on a surface like the face.
Okay, so you just have to use a little caution and common sense.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes total sense. Now, if you wouldn't mind, give us a couple of recommendations for, let's say, a college-age student, and then maybe also somebody that's in the business field. What would be some of your recommendations for them?
Excuse me, for a college age student, you gotta think of what their environment's gonna be. They're in class, they're moving from class to class, and from class to library, and then back to class. So for someone who's gonna be on such a tight schedule, and such a busy schedule, you're gonna want something that's gonna be able to withstand that constant pulse and that constant pace. So for me, I like a polo for that. or something a little bit stronger, like an Abercrombie and Fitch Fierce.
Okay, and for the businessman, let's say working in a business type environment, he's around a lot of different coworkers. He doesn't want to come on too strong, but he wants something that's going to get him noticed a little bit.
Okay, somebody who works in a business office, you want to be able to let them know that you are there, but that you're not a threat. So personally, I would recommend that they would use something not as strong, but you want to use something that can leave a trace of confidence in the room. So I would recommend that they would use something like an Yves Saint Laurent, any in the line of Yves Saint Laurent. So something like that would definitely work.
So we talked about a lot about colognes that work for people in a different environment. Now, is there something that you definitely would not recommend for someone to put on, especially for the first time?
For the first time that you ever wear cologne, you want to stay away from the colognes that make a statement. The colognes that are really serious for the serious connoisseur. Now, for me, that would be something as serious as an Armani Code. That's a serious cologne. You have the fresh, woody, oriental scent. And if you look it up, you actually get the way that they try to sell it as mysterious, modern, and irresistible. So those are kind of descriptive words you really don't want to use as a first-time impression for cologne.
Not too many guys are going to pull those descriptions off. Yeah, definitely get it there. How about some final words of advice before we close out and just give us those last few tips that we can apply?
Sure. Have fun. Enjoy it. But keep in mind that you want to invoke that emotion. Whatever that emotion is, you want to invoke it. And you want to keep in mind that the cologne is supposed to attract. It's not supposed to repel. So you don't have to bathe in it.
Right.
But you also don't want to spray it so lightly and run through it that it's not even on you. So keep that in mind. And less is definitely more.
I appreciate these tips, Gregory. We appreciate you coming on The Life of a Gentleman and helping us understand more about cologne. And in the future, would you be willing to come back on and talk to us about this a little bit more?
Absolutely. This has been a privilege for me.
Thanks again for stopping by. And gentlemen, if you have any questions, please feel free to email us at podcast@harrisonblakeapparel.com and we'll get those questions about cologne over to Gregory and get them answered for you. Perhaps have the answers read on the air. Thanks again, Greg.
My pleasure.
Here's a brief word from our sponsor. This podcast has been brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel. Visit them online for a great selection of neckties, pocket squares, and menswear accessories. Want to really step up your style? Join their monthly subscription club. For $25 per month, you'll receive one necktie plus four additional matching accessories. And now it's time for the segment we like to call The Gentleman's Look. A look into fashion, style, and accessories. This is The Gentleman's Look.
Well, everyone, it's that time of the week again where we get to bring in our resident stylist to help us talk about fashion and style tips. Dennis, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on, gentlemen?
Good to hear from you.
It's going well. Good to hear from you again this week.
And this week we have something interesting that I think the audience is really going to appreciate, because this is a subject sometimes that is very hard to master. We're going to talk about the three-piece suit. Are you up for that, Dennis?
Yes. Love the topic. Okay, well, first of all, before we get started with it, we know we talked about the three-piece suit. Now, can you tell our listeners exactly what is a three-piece suit?
Well, three-piece jacket, trouser, and a vest. Now, the good part about a three-piece suit is that it's perfect to accessorize because there's a lot of layers to it. There's a lot of added to it in depth. So, I mean, you could wear it with a pocket square, you could do a pocket watch, you could do it with a bow tie. It's pretty much, even with hats, it's perfect for a lot of stuff. You can play around with a three-piece suit with a lot of accessories. That's the key.
I definitely agree with you with that, especially the bow tie. It always seems to look really classy when you've got the three-piece suit and then you throw on the bow tie. It definitely is a good look. Why do you think guys shy away from a three-piece suit? Because it's not something that you see all the time.
Well, number one reason is, I think it's the price. You know, two-piece suits are different. You're only paying for the jacket and the pants. When you buy a three-piece suit, you're also spending money on the vest, which varies as far as price range from 90 and above, depending on the quality of the fabric, especially if it's tweed, which is, you know, most common three-piece suits that people like to wear. So that's one of the reasons.
Now, I have a question on that, because you said that people shy away because of the price. But sometimes when I'm in the store, I may see a two-piece suit, and then, or if they have the separates, I may see another vest that's separate. Now, should all of my pieces match, or is it okay to mix and match a three-piece suit?
That's a good question, Charles. In my line of work, I would prefer it to be one whole suit. Now, you can play around with it with some items that you have in your closet to where you're able to, you know, style different, you know, pieces as far as, like, conducive to what you have in your closet. Meaning, if you have a blue navy blazer, you could wear a gray vest underneath it. It varies. A lot of the times, too, when you wear a jean with, let's say you have a sports jacket, then you have a vest that's a different color than the sports jacket. I think if you break it up with jeans, it looks even better.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that casual look, it's a little easier to do the mix and match with it. And I've seen that look quite a bit. I kind of agree with you there. People think that the three-piece suit has to be stuffy, but like you said, if you're going with a casual look with jeans, it's a really nice touch.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta understand this, Charles and Richard. Most gentlemen don't know how to, you know, what to do with the vest. That's another issue besides the fact that it's a little bit more pricey, is the vest scares gentlemen off. Number one, it has to be a perfect fit, meaning it has to fit right up below the belt line. It has to be, you have to make sure the fit is proper, and it can't be loose. It has to be fitted. There's a strap in the back of the vest where you can tighten it accordingly to your waist size.
And that brings me to another question. Now, I know that they are making three-piece suits are making a comeback, but I'm just wondering now, are three-piece suits or the vest look, is it just for smaller guys, or can all sizes benefit from this look?
Well, that's for everybody, I think. But it all depends on, I think the vest, the key item in this whole thing. If the vest looks sloppy and it's not form-fitting, and like I said, it's not properly stationed at the waist, then it's just going to throw everything off. You might as well just take it off. So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. You know, that's why guys shy away from it. They don't know how to style it. You know, it's a difficult piece. You know, you're taking chances. A lot of the gentlemen think of a three-piece suit or something you wear to an occasion, a party, an event. And nowadays, it's worn every day.
Yeah, traditionally, you hear three-piece suit, you think wedding, you know, or like you said, a black tie event. But we did kind of touch on ways to dress down a three-piece suit. But what are some ways you can really dress it up if you do have a big event to go to?
Well, that's a good question. Bow ties are always good. I think you said something about that before, Richard. Bow tie. There's something about the bow tie with a three-piece suit. It's just, I don't know if this fits or not. Now, the one thing that guys should do with a three-piece suit, as far as the bottom pant, is provide that nice cuff that gives it that, you know, refined little bit of proper look at the bottom of your pants. So that's one thing I always encourage. It just looks, I don't know, it just makes the whole outfit well put together.
It's interesting that you say do the cuff with the three-piece suit. You know, I never really would have thought about that, but now that you say it, I'm envisioning it in my head. It makes total sense. A lot of times, I know personally, I don't wear a cuff in my pants, but I did notice I have a couple three-piece suits, and on those three-piece suits, I did put a cuff in there. Now, I don't know if that was just chance, but the when you said that, it just kind of clicked. So that's a good tip. It does give a classier look somehow with the vest.
I know, it does. It just brings everything together. For some strange reason, it just works. Now, gentlemen, let me ask you a question. Do you guys own three-piece suits?
Oh, yes, I own several three-piece suits. And the exact look that you have described, I love that look. I'm an avid bow tie wearer, as we talked about previous. So I do wear the bow tie with the three-piece, with the vest, with the jacket, and my pants are cuffed for the majority of my three-piece suits there. So great tip there, Dennis, and I'm glad that I fashion forward with you.
I was going to mention that another accessory I like to add to the three-piece suit is a lapel pin, and I don't know why. I don't always wear a lapel pin with a two-piece, with a vest. I like to add the lapel pin and a bow tie, so it does give a refined look. Good tips.
Layering is perfect for a three-piece suit. For some reason, you're able to get away with it more than if you wear a two-piece, like a pocket watch or even a pocket chain. However you want to give yourself a gentleman polished look.
Man, that one's out there, though, Dennis. Not everybody can pull off that pocket watch, can they?
No, that's out there. Well, that's what gentlemen do, though.
That's what gentlemen do, and a gentleman is definitely able to pull off any look when it comes to a three-piece suit. Now, I have one final question there for you. Now, when we talk about three-piece, I'm going to ask, do you think that they're making a comeback?
Yes, sir. I don't think they've ever left. I think that more shops are selling them. I think that's the difference. And what's happening now, if you guys notice, it's not just a winter tweed type of thing. Now it's a summer item where you can style it in the summer. You can style it with a t-shirt, with a vest. I mean, make sure the t-shirt is tucked in. Even if it has to be striped. It can't be just a plain t-shirt. If it's something striped, something with patterns, maybe even, you know, floral, stripe, anything that makes the outfit stand out. A lot of the three-piece suits, they sold plain. Now, I recommend this three-piece suit for the summer, gentlemen. A seersucker suit.
Yes.
They are soft in fabric, and they're perfect for the summer.
That's an awesome tip. I think that's something that every gentleman should aspire to get, is a seersucker suit. And, yeah, if you're going to do it in the summertime, go ahead and get the vest, too. Hey, just because we're talking about summer for a second, with a seersucker suit, what kind of shoes kind of go with that? It seems that can kind of throw people off sometimes.
Well, it has to be lighter tone. No, it can't be dark black or dark brown. It's got to be some type of light tan, maybe even a navy, actually.
Okay.
A navy shoe works well, but stay away from black and really, really dark brown. Monk straps are good, too. Wing tips are good. Even loafers.
Oh, okay.
Go sockless, by the way.
With the seersucker?
Yeah, man, it's a must. It's a summer adventure. You got
it. No questions asked, right? Dennis, let me ask you one more question, then we'll let you go. Give us your final tips for the three-piece suit. Just for somebody who's still on the fence, even after this conversation. What do you tell them?
I understand, you know, it's not an easy item to style. I get that. And you know, it has to do a lot of it with weight, how much you weigh, you know, how short you are. But I think it works for anybody as long as you have the right fit. The most important thing is the length of the vest. You can't be short. You cannot have it all the way up your stomach or all the way down. It has to be a little below the waistline. Most important thing is you got to make sure you're comfortable wearing it, because it's not for everyone. Once you give it that first try, trust me, it's going to be a staple in your wardrobe.
Makes sense, those tips you gave, because I've seen guys wear the vest and maybe it was their first time and they're fidgeting around with it and pulling on it and tugging on it, and you can tell they just don't seem comfortable.
That's not gentlemen.
Yeah, what you're saying, it has to fit just right, and I just want to make sure that the listeners understand that, because that is a key component of the three-piece suit. Should we be able to see your belt, or is that too high?
No, it's got to cover the belt.
Okay. But
now, and you have to leave the last button. You can leave it undone. It's optional. It's kind of like your sports jacket. You know? You don't button both jackets, right?
Right.
You button the top one, and you leave the bottom one open. And the sports jacket, the three-piece suit back hundreds of years ago, the jackets were longer. Now it's a little bit more modernized, where the jackets are a little bit shorter, so it makes sense to, you know, wear it with the vest, because it complements, either the jacket and the vest complement each other.
And that it does there, Dennis, and we do thank you once again for having you as our stylist. This week we learned a lot about the three-piece suit. We learned that it has to have the proper fit. That's the key to wearing the three-piece suit, is having the proper fit. Not only that, that with the three-piece suit, that we can layer it. We can use a little bit more accessories. And with the bow tie, it pairs perfectly with it. So thank you, Dennis, this week. And we look forward to talking to you every week on some more styles and tips about fashion and accessories.
Well, gentlemen, that wraps up another episode of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. At the outset today, we had a great discussion all about body language. Body language, it's a way to speak, non-verbally expressing ourselves to tell others who we are without opening our mouths. It also is a way that we can show our confidence and distinguish ourselves as being a true gentleman. It helps send signals to people that we are the total package as we strive to live by the life of a gentleman. We also learn so much about cologne, how to shop for it, selecting the right one for ourselves, and many different nuances of fragrance. We thank Gregory Pittman for coming on and telling us so much about the art of fragrance. Dennis also dropped by and gave us plenty of great nuggets and takeaways that we can use and apply in our styling life. Fashion is constantly changing and we're all growing, so we appreciate these type of discussions helping us to grow continually and enhance our personal style. Allow me to please whet your appetite for next week's episode. We will be talking about how to get financially fit, checking our credit scores, and becoming the total package, as it were. As we always say on the Life of a Gentleman, what good is fashion and dressing impeccably if other aspects of your life are not falling in line with the gentleman lifestyle? So we look forward to that discussion next week as well. I'd like to personally thank my co-host Charles, also Dennis, and our special guest, Gregory, for coming on the episode today and joining us. Would you please do us a favor? Would you rate, review, and subscribe to the Life of a Gentleman podcast? And also send your questions to podcast@harrisonblakeapparel.com, and we'll try to get those answered for you on the air. Until next time, take care.
These messages are brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel, specializing in fashion accessories such as ties and lapel pins. Join the Harrison Blake Monthly Subscription Club. Each month, they deliver one necktie plus four additional matching accessories for only $25. This is the easy way to build or enhance your wardrobe. To learn more and subscribe, visit harrisonblakeapparel.com. These messages are also brought to you by DeAndra Marie, a young, talented female host who conducts interviews, event coverage, and produces the Life of a Gentleman podcast. For inquiries on how to be featured, please visit www.itsdeandramarie.com.